welcome to episode 4 of Side Pitch. It's the podcast from the current creators of the world to the future creators of the world. I'm your host, Callan Swain, and this week we have a very special episode where we're going to be celebrating Pride Month. For those of you who may not know, which I'm really not sure I even did, but the month of June is actually being known globally as Pride Month, which celebrates LGBTQIA life and the overall celebration for equality. So today we have a really special guest, and I am so, so excited for this. During the day, in school, he's known as Mr. Lewis. But on the stage, he's most famously known as Miss Everything Live, an absolutely fabulous drag queen. I bet you didn't see that coming. So this interview is not only fun and exciting to get a look into the drag world and hear about how someone even starts to become a drag queen, but it's also incredibly raw from both sides. At the very beginning of the episode, you'll hear part of the recording when we started the interview, where I'm struggling to find the pronouns to use to refer to Lewis and or Miss Everything Live. Now, I very easily could have edited this out, but I think it's important for people to hear this dialogue. And as you'll hear in the interview, I did not get it perfect. But my goal moving forward is to continue listening, learning, and trying to understand. That being said, let's go ahead and listen in on the interview that's going to make you laugh, cry, and want to get up and sing. And don't mind the iced coffee that Lewis is sipping on while we chat with him. Ladies and gentlemen, here she is, Miss Everything Live. Today we have an amazing guest that I am so excited. Do you want me to refer to you as he or she in Miss Everything?
You could say it. Can you say they or will it throw you off? No, you could say he.
He? Okay.
Yeah, that works.
Should we say they?
Yeah.
Okay, let me try they. Okay, so today we have someone very, very special. They are Miss Everything and Lewis. Is that how I should introduce you? You know what? Let me you introduce yourself.
Aloha, Side Pitch. I am Miss Everything, the worldwide, not yet known extraordinaire, female impersonator, drag queen, or live, should I say live, in Honolulu, Hawaii.
Love it. Amazing. I would love to first ask you to describe what your full-time job is, and then how you decided that you wanted to become a drag queen or get into drag.
Yes, so I am a special education teacher. I started, I want to say about four, this coming August will be my fifth year teaching, so I'm excited. This has been, it's been crazy. I started out teaching Algebra 2 in Oakland, then taught trigonometry, and I still was lost teaching that. And then we moved back to Hawaii, and I taught fifth grade as a resource teacher. They work hand in hand with the general education teachers. Although I had my own classroom, I only taught kids during intervention. This past year was the first year I got to teach my own classroom, high needs. Most had autism or Down syndrome. And it was a whirlwind experience. It was great. So it was really the first year that I felt, wow. Before that, I was doing human resources in the hotels here in Hawaii. From there, me and my partner, my husband, Francisco, we moved to San Diego for 2 years. And it was there that I started volunteering with the Special Olympics. I had a team. We played bocce ball. So I was the coach for the bocce ball team. And you know, those balls are like 20 pounds, huge balls. We're already talking about balls. So I had to teach, you know, this group of five individuals how to play bocce ball. But that was the first experience I had kind of like teaching or coaching. And so from there, you know what, let's just go all in and let's go and teach. And so the Special Olympics was a great experience. We got all the way second place, silver. And there were times, girl, let me tell you, we had to pull them aside, calm down, take a break. People with Down syndrome, you know, they get frustrated a little easier. And then when it's a competition, you know, it takes things to another level. My ultimate goal is to get them out there into the real world. Because when I was training and coaching the Special Olympics in San Diego, a lot of them, they did have jobs. They were cleaning buses, they were cleaning hotels, and they had that purpose. Oh my God, that was all teaching. So coming back to drag, the drag started, I want to say, like October 2018. Yeah, about 2 years ago. And at first, it was just get a wig on Amazon, dress up as Amy Winehouse, bar hop karaoke, and just enjoy, you know, the whole month of October, Halloween.
You just like, I'm gonna go have a great night on the town, and it's Halloween month, so let's go.
Yeah, let's karaoke, let's party it up. That's how it all started. Crazy, yeah. I did that, and I went from bar to bar in between Wang Chan's, and we ended at Hula's. It was crazy because Hula's, I thought, okay, you know, I have the songs downloaded, and I'll just sing to the karaoke instrumental. So when we got there, Mondays is open mic. So GJ is there, guitarist, and he's like, you know what? I know these songs. He's like, let's do it on the guitar. And I said, really? And he's like, yeah. And the owner of Hula's was actually there playing pool that night, heard me. And after I performed, he said, you know what? You sound amazing. Let's have you at our anniversary party where you just sing with a live band. And I was just like, wow, that's how it all began.
That is literally the exact storyline of A Star Is Born, right? Yes, I need her.
Yes, child. That's how it all pretty much began. Oh, child.
I was just going to ask, so Amy Winehouse, you are obviously a huge fan, and I actually remember meeting you at a party in Hawaii, and it was the week right before said performance, and you were such a good saleswoman. You were like, honey, let me sing for you, and you were singing around the party, and I'm like, I need to go see this woman. Unfortunately, I left Hawaii like that week, so I never got to see you perform. The question is, how did you know that you wanted to be Amy Winehouse from the get-go? You seem very confident, and that was the character for you.
Yes, when I was in high school was when I first heard Amy, her Frank album. For me, that album was iconic. At that moment in high school, really changed my life. High school particularly was not easy. I mean, I had really long hair. I would straighten it. I mean, looking back at it now, I thought I was cute. But looking back at it now, I felt like I looked like a little like Michael Jackson. And maybe that's why people treated me that way at that moment. I don't know. But high school was a little rough. That album kept me going. I look back at it now, not only Amy, but all of these artists that I now play, Britney Spears, Tina Turner, Cher, Selena. I mean, they all give me, you know, a little bit more strength inside. That's why I love Amy Winehouse so much. And if you listen to her music and that voice and all of her lyrics, she pretty much wrote that was her diary.
Yeah, I live somewhat close to Camden Town, which is where Amy grew up. And you walk through the streets and you can see the kind of grungy, like the sassy, and it's like personality still very alive here. I do want to ask, and I'm quite curious, growing up in Texas, fairly conservative state, what was that like growing up?
Oh, yes. I mean, this was back in 2005. When I first realized I was gay was about 12. It was at a Cher concert. The whole Believe, you know, the whole world was taken by storm by If You Believe in Love After Love. I mean, everybody, including my mom, she loved Cher at that moment. And I remember she came out with this book. I want to say it was called My First Time. And she had a book signing at Borders. And yeah, we waited in line. And my mom's like, oh, wow, there's a lot of different people around here waiting in line to get Cher's autograph. Not necessarily a picture with her, but girl, get that book signed, say I love you, Cher, and go. And so, you know, there was a lot of LGBTQ community waiting in line. At that time, I want to say 10, 11, 12, my mom, that moment, felt a little bit uncomfortable. But we got to the line, and there she was, Cher in all her glory. And I remember wearing this light blue Reebok two-tone cayenne blue color jacket. And we got to the line, and I just started crying. Oh, I'm going to cry right now, girl. And she said, come up here. She said, come up here, sweetie. And so I remember she called me up, you know, where she was signing the books. And she said, I love you. And she said, your mom loves you. And she said, you're going to get through whatever you're going through. And it was at that moment that I knew I was different. I knew I was gay.
That is a moment. Ooh,
yes, ma'am.
Cher, oh my gosh, just to be in her presence.
I'm looking at her wig right now.
Oh, so when you came out to your family, were they supportive of you, or was it a difficult conversation?
Yes, I remember. I want to say I was a sophomore, and I already had that strut. Like, I'm shaped differently as a man. I have a lot of hips, I have a lot of legs, and I have a lot of ass. And so the boys, you know, I remember 8th grade. I knew people, I was funny, that charismatic person. It attracted people. And so I remember 8th grade, I had a good crowd of friends. It was fun. And I still have a good crowd of friends from eighth grade now who have recently came to visit me in Hawaii. But going from that transition from eighth grade, you know, small school, small kind of school, and then going to high school, you know, then people start to really see, you know, the real you and realize, oh, okay, this kid is gay and we're going to treat him a little differently. And I mean, I remember I got spat on, I got things thrown at me. But at that time, I think I only retaliated once. And I remember I got suspended. And boy, did my mom, she beat my ass. Just for getting suspended for a whole week, you know, I had a lunchbox, those igloo lunchboxes, you know, those big ones. Because I used to eat, child. But I remember some boy just called me a faggot out loud. And, you know, I just went back and I just hit him with that igloo. And he punched me back and I got hit. But, you know, I just felt like, woo. You know, you want to talk shit? Well, igloo to the face. I'm not trying to promote igloo or anything, but it worked. Coming out, it was hard in Texas. And I think that's why I just said, you know, let's just get out and live my own life. Coming out was hard with my mom, particularly. I didn't see my dad until 18. So my mom, she knew I was gay, and it was hard for her. I mean, now we're good. At first, it was hard. I want to say we were like at TGI Fridays. I don't know if those even exist anymore, but but we were there, and I told her I was dating this guy, this senior. I was a sophomore, and she was just like, what? I don't want to talk about this. We're eating. And I remember I didn't bring, girl, I didn't bring it up. And so like 2 years later after that, I was like, ooh, let me turn 18 and get out of the house before I bring this up again. So, I mean, my mom, bless her soul, you know, at that moment, it was just hard for her. I mean, I see it from her eyes. She didn't kick me out of the house. I'm blessed for that. She didn't, you know, hit me or abuse me. I'm blessed for that because so many people deal with that. But she just said, I don't want to talk about this and don't bring it up. For 2 years, I didn't.
And it sounds like you were quite close to your mom.
Yes. Those two years were hard. But now, looking back at it, we got through it. We both grew looking at her now and seeing her views now towards the LGBTQ community. And for me, she has grown and I have grown.
Do you feel like the world has come far from the way that it was in 2005? Or like, what are your thoughts on where we need to go?
I mean, I think there's a dying breed. They're going to fight a little bit harder to get their voices heard. And I think there's a majority that is the minority. But a lot of people see what's going around in the world. And it's not just happening, you know, here in the United States. It's everywhere. People are disenfranchised. And I think that at this moment in time, we all need to hear each other out, everybody, and see what we can do better for the world. Because I look at it and it can be tough. My mom is Mexican and Chinese, half and half. She was treated bad from pretty much both cultures. I mean, she was never good enough to be 100% this or 100% that. I mean, that must have been hard growing up in the 60s, suburbia America. But I think right now is the time that there needs to be change. Where that needs to be, I mean, it starts from the top. It really does. I mean, I was thinking about this earlier today. I was like, ooh, maybe I should run for politics. But it's like, you know, as a policeman, even as a teacher, I mean, here in Hawaii, it's such a small island. For example, when I was teaching in East Bay, I was living in a suburban neighborhood and teaching in an urban neighborhood. So I wasn't living the life that they were living. I wasn't experiencing what they were experiencing in that neighborhood. You know, our police department, for example, I feel like if you're going to be a police officer, you should live in the community that you police in because you build a bond. You build respect and you're able to see what, not 100% see, but able to see what the people in that community are going through and hear their voices. So I think some things need to be changed. I'm not saying if that's happening all around the world in the police department, but I think, you know, having police officers really experience the community that they police. And I could say the same for me being a teacher. You know, I should be able to feel the experiences that my children are going through, that the parents are experiencing right now. I mean, I realize that, like you said, Helen, 50% of the island is unemployed right now. And I'm in, you know, the fortunate 50%. And I have to be aware of that and think of my children and their parents and their future. Because at the end, it plays a part in my role as a teacher as well.
I think that's very insightful, and I totally agree. Yeah, there's just like a lot of emotion running high right now, and first few months of 2020 have been like nothing anyone could ever imagine, but it's exposing a lot of things, especially in the US, that mm-hmm. needed to be exposed.
You're right.
So, question for you, in terms of the way that like teachers are perceived in communities, Hawaii is a very liberal place, very loving, spreading aloha. But when you started to do drag and put on your shows, did you have any issues when it came a little more public and also being a teacher? Were any parents upset?
Ooh, child, as far as I know, no parents know. But my principal does know. And a lot of teachers do know. You know, it's a small island here in Hawaii. But I'm sure it'll get out sooner or later. And I try, as a drag artist, not to be too vulgar, you know, because I am an educator. But at the same time, what I do is off the clock. And I would say to be in character as the artist that I am on stage is different than the teacher I am in the classroom, you know? So that's my argument. If anything, I would feel that being a drag artist or female impersonator has made me a better teacher, if anything, a better educator. Being able to play lullabies and sing songs on the ukulele to my kids pretty much all the time, and having them sing along and practice their speech and dance and be free has been inspiring for them and for me as well. So I feel if anything, it's made me a better advocate, a better person, I would say. I've also been volunteering at a coffee shop here, Keiki and the Pineapple, pre-COVID, before all this, you know, happened, of course, and just playing, you know, 20 lullabies for kids at the coffee shop. So none of that would have happened. The ukulele for me would have never happened if I didn't start doing drag, you know.
And you said earlier that you play for kids so that they can feel free and they can dance and express themselves. So is being a drag artist the way that you're able to do that in your own?
I think I'm getting there. I don't think Miss Everything as an artist is very vulgar or, you know, raunchy. I don't think I have to be. I mean, Miss Everything, she's a musician. She plays the ukulele, the guitar. She, you know, she's Amy Winehouse, she's Cher, she's Tina Turner, she's Britney Spears, she's Selena. And I try to stay true to the artist, but at the same time, be a little funny, be a little gritty on the side, throw in a little fusion. But I try and stay true to the artist as much as I can, the way that I see the artist. So for me, I don't think that Miss Everything will ever really get in the way of what I do during the day as an educator, because I don't think she'll ever really steer away from the artist I play, per se.
So other than being all of those different characters, who is Miss Everything? How would you describe her?
Miss Everything is that. Miss Everything in a bag of chips. 5 personalities and all. she's still growing as an artist. She's still growing as a performer. But she's Miss Everything. She wants to really entertain the crowd and bring them into the experience. When I perform, I really try and bring the audience into the concert, like you're there seeing Selena or Amy Winehouse or Cher. And I feel that when we do come back from this pandemic and bring back live concerts, I want to bring that back to the world and bring people together and engage everybody. A lot of the songs I sing are songs that everybody knows. The Cher, Believe, the Amy Winehouse, Rehab, the Tina Turner, Proud Mary, Britney Spears, Toxic, Baby One More Time, Selena, Como La Flor, Bitty Bitty Bum Bum. I have had a special emotion with each of these artists. Like, you know, you've heard me speak of Cher and Amy. But I've really had an emotional experience with all of these artists. I've been to so many Britney Spears concerts. And I'm sure a lot of people have had an experience with one, if not all of these artists as well. That's Miss Everything, being able to captivate a crowd throughout the whole experience. Because when I was first doing it, it was just Amy Winehouse. And a lot of people were saying, what's next? What's next? And I was like, this is all you're going to get, Amy Winehouse. I was like, I'm not spending, you know, $1,000 on wigs and clothes and stuff. I just can't spend money out of the blue. That's why I'm working summer school and doing all these other things, because I do want to afford nice costumes that aren't from Amazon or Ross. I purchased 2 costumes so far. both created by women, which have been great. I really want to strive to, you know, get my costumes created by minorities or women. But I feel like Miss Everything is that, just creating that opportunity to sing along and to dance along, because all of these songs mean something to all of us.
I think, yeah, Miss Everything brings energy. You can see it on your Instagram posts. I remember seeing one of you as Tina Turner like on the road, and like it made me smile and it made me laugh. And I think that's probably exactly what Miss Everything does to people in person as well.
Yes, brings you back to the 80s, the early 90s.
So one of the things that I usually ask for people who, I don't know if there's going to be a lot of aspiring drag artists that are listening to this. I think most people are just very curious to just hear about what life is like as a drag artist. So what are some of the myths of being a drag artist? Something that you think that people should know?
I think one of them is that as drag artists, we're all competition. But at the same time, you're not, because I've met a lot of great drag artists, trans artists, just amazing human beings that have helped me develop my drag, you know, helped me really see where I can go in this. So I would say just find the love of the art and then get to know people as human beings outside of just the drag. I have a drag mother, Miss Candy Shell, and she's been amazing just seeing her as an artist and seeing where she's gone, what she's doing and what she's creating.
A drag mother. How does one get a drag mother?
Yes, they have to say, honey, will you be my daughter?
No way. Like a proposal.
Yes, honey. Well, maybe. She didn't get on any knees.
That's amazing. So your drag mother, what are her responsibilities? Just to help you through difficulties, help you find yourself? What does she do?
Yeah, she's been good. She's been helping me really develop as an artist, because I've been experimenting. Oh, child. I've been experimenting with GarageBand and playing around, creating different beats. So she taught me really how to create your own music and create your own sounds. So that's what I've been doing on the side as well, on top of the guitar, ukulele. I've been playing around with the SoundCloud, creating different beats. And I'll just come up with different rhymes in my head, and they'll be just random. And then going back, hopefully sometime in the future, and playing around with it on GarageBand. But I created this one song, and I'm debating about releasing it. It's called Microplastic.
Ooh.
If it wasn't for her, I wouldn't have played around, you know, with the GarageBand, really try and create my own. Not that I'm not creating my own music with the guitar ukulele, you know, Miss Everything as herself in her own music. So maybe that'll come out in the next few weeks. Miss Everything, Microplastics.
We already have a fan right here. For anybody that is thinking, I've always wanted to try drag, I am just too scared, what tips do you have for them to get into it? Because it can be kind of an intimidating world, I feel.
It is. I mean, you have RuPaul's Drag Race. That's just in itself 200 girls that have that publicity and that TV time. But I would say be different. I never thought I'd be playing ukulele or guitar. And it was that first performance at Hula's. And I remember one of the guitarists saying, do you know what key you're in? I just said, I don't know. B. And I was at that moment, I realized, okay, if I'm going to be a singer, I need to understand everything as a whole. And that's how I started taking guitar lessons and playing the ukulele and guitar and whatnot. And it's been a struggle. I mean, I only know 15 songs in the past 2 years, if that. But I feel that as a drag artist, be different. Go out there, steer away from the crowd, learn something, learn a new hobby, learn how to juggle, do magic tricks, learn how to do the splits that always works for the crowd, learn how to sing, just be different. With this past season 12 RuPaul, I'm not a really big fan of RuPaul, to be honest, but I do watch it because it's an addiction. But this last season 12, Crystal Method, she was just out there and different, and I really love that as a drag artist, just being different and not just lip syncing always, but just doing the same thing, you know, be different.
I love that. Is there anything in terms of the drag community or anything that you think the audience should know?
Yes, I would just say get out there, whatever you're doing, your side pitch. Whatever you're doing, get out there, network, look up different websites, look up different resources to make your brand better. For me, recently during this whole COVID-19 thing, I was planning on developing Divas Live One Woman Show performance where I would sing 15 songs with all of the 5 different artists, you know, for a live venue here in Hawaii. But now that COVID is happening, you know, we have to plan a different route, go a different way. What can you do in the meantime as you're planning 75, 90 minute show? Just looking at it now, child, I mean, I've been working out, trying to get in shape. In a 75, 90 minute show in heels, just me by myself, I realize, right now, no. Maybe next year. But that got me into another experience. I applied, auditioned for Aloha Karaoke Band. It comes full circle for me because that's where it all started, karaoke. So now I'm in this, the MC for Aloha Karaoke Band, where anybody, you can come up on stage, sing a song, and you can be the next drag superstar.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. I think that's totally right, especially now during coronavirus, everyone's sitting at home thinking about your career, your life. Some people can feel really stagnant, and that's exactly what I felt and why I wanted to do something creative and create a podcast. So
you being a drag artist and talking about that shows that there are so many amazing
creative things on the side. And just like you said, it doesn't interfere with your normal job. It actually helps you better understand the children that you work with.
Absolutely.
So, Miss Everything, thank you so much for sharing your story. If people want to reach out to you, where can they get a hold of you?
Yes, you can find me at Miss Everything Live, or should I say at Miss Everything Live on Facebook or Instagram. And hopefully in the future, when we can all come out for a show and come see the Divas Live, child.
Yes, Honolulu, Hawaii, Miss Everything. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you so much. Love you.
Amazing. Such an amazing interview. As you heard, Lewis has such an amazing heart. And I think it's so creative and imaginative and really powerful that Lewis has been able to draw parallels between teaching as a public educator to being a drag queen and finding ways to help students express themselves. I think other than him making me a bigger Cher fan than I ever thought possible, from a business perspective, he made really great points about building your brand. It's a saying that's thrown around in the corporate world a lot, but has so much meaning behind it. And just like Lewis said, Miss Amy Live during this time of pandemic and coronavirus is really looking for ways to enhance her product, which is herself. So whether your goal is to do a 3-hour karaoke in 5-inch heels or to start your own company, take the advice of Miss Everything Live and remember, always be unique. You might even get a drag mother. Thanks so much for tuning in this week. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Music, CastBox, any place you can listen to podcasts. And also find us on our website, www.sidepitchpodcast.com, where you can find all of the audio transcriptions to all of the episodes. That is all we have for this week. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we will see you next Monday. We're coming for you. We're coming.